This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Bowl season is looming. Tune in tomorrow night for the ACC Championship game presented by Dr. Pepper. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. And Amber, right now we have to go out to the Goodyear Hotline to bring on our friend and co-host of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast, Chris the Bear Felica. And Bear, I got to ask you, starting out with Conference Championship weekend, the Big Ten Championship game in Indianapolis with number 2 Michigan, who's an 11-point favorite, taking on the number 13 Iowa Hawkeyes. The over-under on this game is 43.5. Where do you see value in this particular game, and which side of the line is value when these two teams match up on Saturday?
I just am not sure, barring Michigan helping Iowa, how the Hawkeyes score any points in this game. If you look at Michigan this season, in 10 of 12 games, they have turned the ball either at 0 or 1 time. And Iowa is a team that generates almost 30% of their points directly off of turnovers. So if Michigan doesn't help them, if Michigan isn't flat coming off of its biggest game and biggest win in eons, certainly in the Harbaugh era, if not going well back before then, I just don't see how Iowa can score points and hang in this game. Michigan's done a really good job all season taking care of the ball and just taking care of inferior opponents. And I think they'll do it again tomorrow night.
Chris, let's turn our attention to the Big 12. And there is a scenario where Baylor could actually make their way into the playoffs. There's numerous scenarios where Oklahoma State could make its way into the playoffs. Oklahoma State favored in this one by 5.5. How do you see this Big 12 championship playing out?
And you're right. I mean, I think the fact that this is the first game up on Saturday will set the day and maybe add a little bit of pressure for certain teams out there. Earlier in the week, I thought maybe Baylor was the right side, but I'm not sure. I don't think Bohannon is going to play. And I hearken back to that first meeting that Baylor and Oklahoma State had this year. It was a double-digit point win for Oklahoma State, despite the fact the Cowboys turned the ball over 3 times and Baylor didn't turn it over at all. So now you're getting a backup quarterback, most likely. You're probably not going to get a big turnover advantage like you did in the first meeting. And remember a couple of weeks back when Baylor wound up losing to TCU, and TCU had the backup quarterback come in, Morris, and they beat the Bears. The following week, TCU wound up playing Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma State had some film on Morris and were able to prepare, and they wound up blowing the Horned Frogs out. It could be a similar type situation here where the backup quarterback played last week for Baylor. Now Mike Gundy and Jim Knowles in that defense have some tape to prepare for the backup. So I think by tomorrow morning on Gambi, I can get on board with laying 5 or 5.5 with the books.
Chris, in the penultimate rankings for the college football playoff, we've got a group of 5 team in Cincinnati ranked number 4, which is the highest any group of 5 team has been rated. They're 10.5-point favorites in the AAC championship game against the number 21 ranked Houston Cougars. How do you see this game? How do you see the line? Which side do you like?
Yeah, I know it's not the biggest sample size out there, but in the couple of meetings that we have had with Luke Fickell in Cincinnati against Dana Holgorsen and Houston, Cincinnati has handled them, and they've been pretty one-sided games, and they've really controlled the Houston offense. A bigger like theme just with the playoff is just kind of the lack of upsets in these games. You go back to the BCS era where you had seemingly every year BCS 1, 2, or 3 were losing. In the playoff era, there have been 28 games where you've had either a Power 5 team or the American in the American favored by more than 4 points. Only one has lost outright, and that was Utah a couple of years back against Oregon in the Pac-12 game. So these favorites who have been expected to win have won. The one difference, though, we talked about Michigan, we talked about Oklahoma State, we just talked about Cincinnati. All 3 of these teams are teams that have not been in it, have not had the pressure of playing for a playoff. So maybe with a little bit of a new territory here, new pressure, maybe this could be a year where one of these teams does feel the pressure and they play a little bit tight. But on paper, this game should be a Cincinnati blowout.
Chris the Bear Felica joining Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. So, Chris, let's turn our attention to the SEC Championship. We have a poll up right now, a show poll on Twitter that's making it pretty obvious that people are very confident in the Georgia Bulldogs in this matchup against Alabama. The Bulldogs are 6.5-point favorites. The over-under is 49.5. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a very high-scoring game. If you look at Kirby Smart in Georgia, going back to 2018, the 16 games that the Bulldogs have played against ranked opponents, 13 of them have gone under. So it's a very comfortable type situation that that Kirby and the Bulldogs enjoy playing in lower scoring games. And I haven't, and getting back to your poll, I haven't heard very many people like Alabama at all this week. I do think, though, the number is a little bit of an overreaction to what we saw last week against Auburn. Last week, Alabama would have been about a 3.5-point favorite and around plus 140, 145 on the money line. Now you're a 6.5-point favorite and around plus 210 on the money line. So if you like the Tide and you want to keep the faith, you're certainly going to be very handsomely rewarded. If you are an Alabama fan, a couple of things that I would point towards to potentially giving you reason for optimism. Number one, I don't believe Jamari Sellier is going to play for Georgia, and that certainly will give Will Anderson and that Alabama defense a little bit more success there. That'll be one of their better offensive linemen there. And then the other thing is Jameson Williams will be back. He did not play a good part of that game after that targeting penalty last week, so Bryce Young will have his favorite weapon. So while on paper, and if you look at the way Georgia has played all year long, loose, free, optimistic, fun, like the best team in the country, maybe they come out tomorrow and do that. But again, until you beat Alabama and you get over that hurdle, there still might be their question in their head.
Chris, we appreciate a few moments of your time today. Enjoy conference championship weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
We will. Take care of both. Hope you have a great weekend.
All right. That is Chris the Bear Felica, co-host of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. Coming up next, is it time to bench Ben Roethlisberger? We'll get into it. You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr. with Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Tune into a football doubleheader Sunday as the Jets host the Eagles, followed by Ravens at Steelers. Coverage begins at noon Eastern on select ESPN radio stations. And I got to give a shout out to the guys behind the glass, Devin Kane and Shannon Penn, because they did have us bumping the 3-6 Mafia coming back from break. And we know we had the 3-6 versus Bone Thugs versus Challenge last night. And I think our next guest that's coming in on the Goodyear Hotline would know something about that. My man Swagoo, Big Marcus Spears, my former teammate. He's football analyst on ESPN, co-host of NFL Live, and co-host of Swagoo and the Perk podcast. I don't know how many more titles this man has working for ESPN, but clearly this one of the hardest working men in the business. Swagoo, I got to ask you this question, big fella. Not that I'm going to be the next candidate on Top Model, and I'm not somebody that's a regular at Fashion Week, but you are the big Swagoo, so much so that I thought you were a little bit too big to have that top button on that polo buttoned up on SportsCenter. Tell me what's up with that, bruh.
Well, see, here's the thing, C2, and I call Chris Canty C2 audience out there. You know, I've been doing things that big men have been looked at as unacceptable for a long time. You know that. So until a big man starts doing it, it's not going to be accepted. So I guess I'm just ahead of my time to answer your question.
I hear you, big fella. I hear you, and I'm going to buy into it. I'm going to start rocking all of my polos like that, too, just because you
do
said
it,
so.
Man.
I'm gonna start doing it. You started the trend. I'm gonna follow it up. But I gotta ask you this on the follow up question. Getting back to Thursday Night Football with our Cowboys beating the Saints, it was a win, and so we'll take it after losing two straight and three of the last four. But I'm still concerned about this offense not being able to run the football when they really need to. Now I noticed the statistics: 24 rushes for 146 yards. But Swagoo, in the fourth quarter, the Cowboys had 11 rushes for 35 yards, and they had a double-digit lead. They weren't able to get into their four-minute offense and shorten the game and close that game out. And the lack of productivity from Ezekiel Elliott is a big concern for me. Am I tripping, or do you see that the same way?
Nah, you're not tripping, man. I would say one thing is Zeke hurt, and somebody needs to say it, right? Like, he's injured, and to play that position – and to have explosiveness, it's not there for him right now. The other part is, I had more of a problem last night, C2, with Kellen Moore's creativity, more than anything. We saw the talent on display from the Dallas Cowboys. Gallup made a play back in the end zone. CD made plays, ball in his hands, yards after catch. Amari made his catches. He beat his one-on-ones. Tony Pollard, finally they got him on the perimeter and he was able to take it to the crib. So it is not a personnel issue. I truly believe that Kellen Moore has I don't know if he's lost something. I don't know what is going on, but it just doesn't seem like it's enough getting playmakers the ball quickly in their hands and allowing them to make plays after the catch. Even in the run game, C2, you know this. Mm-hmm. When you bashing your head in the inner parts of the line of scrimmage running from guard to guard, that's very tough, especially against one of the top run defenses in the league. So why don't you go zone stretch? Why don't you do a couple tosses to soften things up with those defensive tackles coming upfield so fast, which they were able to take advantage of in the third quarter, which is why Pollard hit a home run ball. Lack of creativity. We watched it against the Kansas City Chiefs as well. You consistently dropping back to throw the football, and Chris Jones is consistently bashing your head in with both of your guards. And I just never could understand why it was during the 6-1 time, it was creativity. We talked about Dak and we talked about the weapons and all of that, but the play calling was phenomenal. He was in his bag. I don't know what's going on with Kellen Moore. I don't know why the creativity isn't there. Last night they got into a drop-back game, and I understand you want to throw the ball because the Saints have given up yards over the top. But ultimately, man, you got to figure out a way to get number 20, Tony Pollard, obviously CD, Amari Cooper, these guys the ball with easy access and allow them to be athletes. And I don't see that enough. Where is the jet sweep motion, C2? Where is the screen game? Where is getting guys – where is getting your tight end involved in some of the screen game? Where are the heavy packages that you were running earlier in the year? Man, I can go on all day. Just look at the film, compare the first seven games to the last four we've watched, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
So it sounds like there are some ways, though, that you could fix the Cowboys. Let's talk about the Steelers for a second. I'm curious if you think that there's any ways to fix the 5-5, and don't forget about that one. The Pittsburgh Steelers, obviously an 8-3 Baltimore Ravens team coming to town. What about Ben Roethlisberger? The rumblings have started to bench him. Can you possibly bench a legend, Marcus?
I don't think you bench him. They made the decision not to bench Ben Roethlisberger when they brought him back. I think what has failed Pittsburgh is the fact that they have, when we saw this team having success for a couple of weeks, it was Najee Harris driven. It was the run game that was starting to ascend and taking pressure off of Ben. Now they're back into throwing 30, 40 times a game. They turning the football over. If you look at the Cincinnati game, DBs weren't even retreating. They sat on every single route, because they know Big Ben is not going to extend plays, and he pretty much has the remaining structure or the timing of passing plays because there's no escapability. And then when you don't have Najee going in the run game, you're susceptible because that offensive line is not blocking well when you're dropping back to pass. So you got a recipe for disaster. You got an immobile quarterback. You got an offensive line that doesn't pass protect well. And you have an offensive coordinator that, again, like I said about Dallas, is sticking to the script. These plans are looking the same old, same old. And look, we all know, when you run the football successfully, it opens up more of your playbook. It allows you to do more. But in the case of Pittsburgh, when you can't run it, it is catastrophic. Because your quarterback is not going to move and extend plays, and your offensive line is not going to hold up. And they, I know damn well, they don't want to have that situation transpire based on what we saw Baltimore do last week from a defensive standpoint. It's rough right now in Pittsburgh, and I think all of us in our heart of hearts knew it was coming, but we didn't think it'd look this bad.
Yeah, an aging quarterback behind a bad offensive line is a bad formula. Kind of like Brian Kelly using a fake Southern accent when he's introducing himself to the LSU fans.
Absolutely. C2, listen.
Exactly.
You know me, bro. You know that made me so mad. And I'm thinking about all the jokes I can give when I get on TV and we talk about that, because that is an absolute mess.
But that's your coach, Wagyu. I mean, 10 years, $95 million. That's your guy for right now.
He ain't. I'm just playing, C2. Hey, listen, man. Unless you feel like they got the coach that they need in order to be consistent and win championships, more power to them. I'm going to be happy if they win, and I'm going to blast them if they lose. You know how I rock, bro.
I already know. That's the big Swagoo, Marcus Spears. Mark, we appreciate some time, man. We'll talk again soon.
Always, family. Y'all take care.
All right. That's Marcus Spears, ESPN NFL analyst, co-host NFL Live, co-host of the Swagoo and Perk podcast at Marcus Spears 96 on the Twitter. Coming up next, we got Waka Flocka Flame joining the show to discuss his new collaboration with the Atlanta Hawks. But first, this from Man in the Arena. Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports, a companion piece to Gotham's ESPN's Plus docuseries. This 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career, things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, and even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. This is Chris Canny. Canny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canny and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Amber, we'll go there in a second. But first, we want to invite all the listeners to join the conversation that we're having on the Dr. Pepper line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729. We asked the question, which team is least likely to make it to the college football playoff? The four choices: Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, Cincinnati. That is the current top four in the college football playoff rankings. Which team is going to get bounced out of the top four in championship weekend? We're throwing that out there. That's also the weekend preview poll on ESPN Radio for Canty and Golic Jr. So we want to encourage you to go to the Dr. Pepper Twitter line. Check that out as well. And Amber, right now, I don't necessarily feel like the Georgia Bulldogs need to be on upset alert. Just looking at the line of scrimmage, offensive line, defensive line, I just feel like they have more dudes in comparison to where Alabama's at. And I just don't know how Alabama's going to be able to block Jordan Davis or Jalen Carter, the defensive tackles for the Georgia Bulldogs. I just don't see how that happens.
Yeah, the results of our poll, the way that Alabama is running away with it in that poll, that everyone expects that they're going to be the team most likely left out. What that shows is the confidence that everyone has in Georgia. Like, this feels like the matchup that seems most predictable, which is saying a lot considering it's this Alabama team that has been standing in the way of Georgia for the last decade in terms of them reaching any sort of success. And of course, it's been 41 years for them since they've had a national title. It feels like that this Bama team, though, this year has cracks in it in a way that we haven't seen in recent memory, where this Georgia team, defensively particularly, there ain't no cracks, Chris. Like, that defense is so legit and so dominant. And that is the one team in college football, as much parity as there's been this season, which has been great for the sport, but that's the one team in college football that has been far and away the best, and it feels like nobody is really going to be able to challenge them. The problem is that they're Georgia, and it's Nick Saban, and you can never count out Nick Saban. And it's been a long time since, frankly, we've been able to completely count on Georgia, but this feels like the year.
Well, Amber, let's go out to the Goodyear hotline and bring on someone who calls Georgia home, award-winning rapper Waka Flocka Flame. And Waka, I know you got a collaboration with the Atlanta Hawks, and we're going to get to that in a second, but I want you to chime in on the conversation we're having about the SEC championship game. The SEC championship game we got coming up this weekend between Georgia and Bama, man. Are you worried? What's your confidence level in the Dogs going into this game?
Go Dogs!
Daddy.
Go Dogs! We ain't worried. Not a tad bit, man.
Not even a little bit, huh?
I mean, it is no. Nick Saban on that other side. That's been a Bama team. That's been a thorn in your side for a very, very long time. What is your confidence level in terms of, like, actually winning a national championship here? Is this the year?
This is the year right here. This is the year to it's impossible to be overconfident. I think we so focused as a team, as a state, as a school, as a whole. I think Georgia has came together and Georgia has worked as one. And we putting in the work and the results are showing. So Alabama really got some upsetting coming.
Well, I know Atlanta has dealt with a lot of heartbreak when it comes to their sports teams in recent memory, but it feels like the Braves got everybody turning the corner on that one, and now the Georgia Dogs are next in line to be able to bring it home. So we'll see if they can get that done starting this weekend. But I know you're an NFL fan as well. You root for the Falcons. So I got to ask you, man, what's the future with Matt Ryan down there as the quarterback? Do they need to run it back with him next year, or is it time for him to get up out of there?
No comments.
I'm not even mad at you. If you can't say nothing good, don't say nothing at all. I am not mad at you for that one. We're going to keep it pushing, Waka. Right now, Waka Flocka Flame, award-winning rapper, joining Kenny and Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio. And Waka, I know you've got this collaboration with the Atlanta Hawks. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you have going on with them in your streetwear line?
Yes, man. I'm excited for this big, big collaboration. This is big news for me in my career to partner with my hometown basketball team, the Atlanta Hawks, in a new clothing line. It's called Skirt, S-K-I-R-T. S-K-R-I-T. It's great with the Atlanta Hawks, man. It just feels amazing, man. I just want y'all to come down, come support, man. Come get you some grade A gear. That's what I'm just going to say. I don't want to put too much on it. Grade A gear. I'm just excited. I'm not going to lie, man.
Waka, does the swag come in big sizes? Because I'm 6'8", 340 pounds, so I'm going to need to have a little room to breathe with my gear on. So can I get some Skirt streetwear in that 4XLT?
Yes.
Can I get that?
Yeah, this is high fashion streetwear, by the way. And it's for us, the big boys, you know? Like,
right.
This sweatsuit, I'm telling you, man, the sweatsuit is comfortable. It's literally it's like pajamas, man. You're going to love it. Yeah, it's that comfortable. It's an outfit that feels as comfortable as pajamas.
All right, well, we're going to have to work that out where I can get my hands on some of this gear, man, because you're talking
it
up.
It feels like you're
finagling. I need to test drive it. I need to get that.
It feels like you're finagling for some gear.
Well, I mean, listen, it's hard for big fellas to find stuff that can fit us, but he's saying he's going to hold me down with this, so I'm expecting him to hold me down with that. That's all I'm saying, Amber. I'm expecting to get some gear from Waka. But one last question for you, Waka, before we let you get on out of here. I know that Trae Young is a rising superstar in the NBA. I also know that your mom is a native of Jamaica, Queens, and so seeing Trae Young light up the Garden in the playoffs last year, I'm pretty sure Miss Deb wasn't too happy about all of that. Did you let her know about that? Did you razz her a little bit about it? How did that all go down in your household?
Miss Deb is a Georgia peach. Let me make that clear. So we were definitely happy for Trae Young putting up those buckets. As I'm saying this interview in a room full of New Yorkers, and I'm born one. So I feel good. Trae Young broke some ankles. He showed up.
Yeah, he's a monster out there. I mean, the future for the Atlanta Hawks is really bright, and I know you got to be feeling really good about that. Well, Waka, we appreciate you coming on the show and giving us a few minutes for us. enjoy the SEC championship game, and enjoy rooting for your Georgia Bulldogs. Hopefully they can bring home a national title for you guys.
Go Dogs.
All right, my man. That is rapper Waka Flocka Flame joining Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Coming up next, should Micah Parsons be the favorite to win NFL Defensive Player of the Year? We'll give you the answer. This is Amber Wilson and Chris Canty, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Amber, I want to go back to last night's game between the Saints and the Cowboys, because there's one element that we did not discuss. I know a lot of the conversation when it comes to the defensive side of the ball has to do with the Cowboys being able to come up with four interceptions. But I want to talk about the one-man wrecking crew, a guy that seems like he is a wrecking ball unto himself, and that is one Micah Parsons in the ball game that he was able to have last night. Like, I just – the numbers speak for themselves. I mean, he had – what is it? Seven tackles, one sack, one tackle for loss, and he had two quarterback hits. But just the plays that he made, the spots that he made them, I mean, that sack that he had on Taysom Hill in the fourth quarter – when the Saints were driving into plus territory with the, and the Cowboys had a 10-point lead, like that took them out of field goal range, and that forced the Saints to punt. And that was a valuable possession for them because obviously the clock is working against them. So for him to be able to come up with that play in space against Taysom Hill, who is one of the more athletic quarterbacks that you'll see in the National Football League, that's a big-time play. But the play that stands out to me in my mind was right before halftime, where he's actually in coverage against the Saints and Kenny Stills. And he actually pivots and runs with Kenny Stills, ends up breaking up the pass that then Jayron Kearse would intercept the ball with the beautiful toe tap. But just seeing a middle linebacker that has that kind of range where he can rush the quarterback, Michael Parsons got 10 sacks on the season, and then he can turn in coverage with wide receivers in the NFL. And Kenny Stills, he spent some time out in the Dolphins, so you know he's a little bit of a burner. To be able to keep up with him, break up the pass that Jayron Kearse would then intercept, like I don't know too many players that have that type of versatility on the defensive side of the ball. And so while I think he's a shoe-in for Defensive Rookie of the Year, I think it's time we start putting Micah Parsons in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year because he's just that damn good.
Yeah, I was pulling the odds for Defensive Player of the Year, and I was surprised that he's not even a lot, not even included in a lot of the odds that I was pulling up. He's absolutely a player that should be now part of that conversation. I get that he's a rookie. It's an easy award to give him the Rookie of the Award, but I do think that he has catapulted to that next level where he is in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year generally. You mentioned what he was doing there with Taysom Hill. I mean, you mentioned Taysom Hill's athleticism. Like, that is so impressive. There's a lot of things you can say about Taysom Hill, but you have to keep in mind, although maybe not the best quarterback, he is an unbelievably elite athlete. You saw it last night when he jumped over a dude when he was running. Like, Taysom Hill can get it done with his legs, and he can evade the pressure, and yet he could not evade Micah Parsons. So for Micah Parsons to have the success that he had, and now we know that it's not just, you know, running down quarterbacks and attacking them like they're his prey. Now we know that he's making plays on the ball when it's in the air, which is what he did with that Kenny Stills play that you just referenced. He's an incredible athlete. He's absolutely part of that conversation. And that conversation typically doesn't involve, you know, your base position, which is in Dallas, of being a linebacker. Like, he's not a DN. That's not his base position. That makes this all the more impressive.
Yeah, no question about it. He is clearly a pressure player, and I think he's the most valuable piece that Dan Quinn has on that side of the ball. And that's saying a lot because Trayvon Diggs leads the league in interceptions. He's got nine of them. He had one in last night's game, but I mean, you talked about it. I mean, Micah Parsons is that chess piece, that queen that you can just move all over the field. If you're shorthanded at the defensive line and pass rushers, you can put him on the ball and he can rush the quarterback against offensive tackles. If you need him in the middle of your defense to match up with tight ends and running backs, he can do that. If you need him to drop in the deep middle of the field and cover wide receivers, he's shown the ability to be able to do that. So to have that kind of range and to have the football IQ to wear all of those different hats for the Cowboys defense, that shows a maturity beyond his years. This isn't a guy that's playing like a rookie right now, and I feel like we got to give him a lot more respect. So for Micah Parsons, like I was not one of those people that was on board with the Dallas Cowboys making the selection because I didn't know that they were going to realize the return on that investment as early as they did. But seeing what he has become and then seeing what their defense has transformed to, I absolutely believe it was absolutely a home run pick by Will McClay, by Jerry Jones, and that front office staff, because you're talking about a defense, Amber, that was 28th in scoring last year. And now the Dallas Cowboys defense is 10th in scoring defense and their 5th in takeaways with 23 on the season. Micah Parsons is the biggest reason why. This is probably the biggest transformation of any unit in all of football.
Yeah, as much criticism as Jerry Jones gets, they knocked this pick out of the park. And that 10th sack that he got last night, and by the way, that's just the 10th NFL player to reach that milestone this year. So, I mean, in all of these conversations, you're talking at this point, Micah involving himself in Defensive Player of the Year conversations, Rookie of the Year on that side of the ball conversations, and then also, you know, top 10 kind of conversations as well. When he got that sack, though, it moved that Saints team out of field goal range at a really pivotal point where, you know, that could have maybe changed the tides of that game. I don't know if I believe it would have, but hey, maybe it would have given the Saints an opportunity to make a comeback there. He's making the big plays when it matters most. He's absolutely one of the cornerstones now of that Dallas Cowboys defense, and he's doing it as a rook. It's really unbelievable to watch.
So, Amber, here's what I will say. My short list for Defensive Player of the Year, here's how I would power rank it. I think Myles Garrett is the front runner. I think J.C. Jackson is a close two. I would put Michael Parsons third, and then Trevon Diggs fourth, and then Matt Judon fifth. That's kind of how I see it in terms of Defensive Player of the Year. Like, that's how I would power rank them. And to say that
no
I would
Aaron
put
Aaron Donald, no T.J. Watt.
No Aaron Donald, no T.J. Watt. I mean, I look at team success as a part of it, and I don't know that the Rams are heading in the right direction in terms of Aaron Donald getting consideration, although I do think Aaron Donald is the best player in all of football. It's just that he doesn't get a lot of opportunities to show it because everybody accounts for him with two or three offensive linemen. But Myles Garrett, J.C. Jackson, what they've done for their respective teams, and then I've got to put Micah Parsons right there. That would be my top three, and if I had to round out a top five, Trevon Diggs and Matt Judon, and I could flip-flop the order of those last two. But, I mean, Micah Parsons should absolutely be in that conversation. Really surprised that he's not. But I will say this as well. That Dallas Cowboys defense, that's the thing that we've got to make sure we keep an eye on down the stretch. I know they've got enough firepower on the offensive side of the ball, but I'm curious to see whether or not that defense will be able to hold up, especially as we move into the division schedule with the Cowboys, more division opponents, teams that know them from a personnel standpoint a lot better than the rest of the NFL. What do you think of the Cowboys' prospects, that defense being able to play at that same level that we saw them last night for the rest of the way?
Well, they're not going to be playing the Saints the rest of the way, so I think that's going to be the kink in your plan there, but absolutely.
Yeah, so we'll end up seeing what happens with the Dallas Cowboys. But coming up next, which team is least likely to make it to the college football playoff? We'll get into that. And the answer that we come up with might surprise you. Again, the top four in the college football playoff, Bama, Georgia, Michigan, and Cincy, all live in conference championship weekend. We'll see what happens. It's Amber Wilson and Chris Canty, Canty and Golic Jr.